But first, Arizona is making progress in helping young people either find work or go to school. 2 years ago, Arizona ranked 42nd in the nation for the percentage of 16 to 24-year-olds not working or going to school. An analysis by the United Health Foundation shows Arizona now ranks 31st in the percentage of these young adults, called opportunity youth. But even with that drop, there are still more than 67,000 opportunity youth here in the Valley, nearly 12% of the total population of 16 to 24-year-olds here. To find out more about what's being done to reach this population, our co-host Mark Brody spoke with Tim Valencia, Youth and Education Director for the City of Phoenix, and Kristen Ferguson Colvin, a professor of social work at ASU and director of the Center for Human Capital and Youth Development. Mark started the conversation by asking Tim how officials go about trying to find these young adults.
It is definitely hard work. So finding these individuals really takes a team approach. It really takes street teams. It takes going to where the youth are. One thing that we have found out over the years with Opportunity Youth is that the system has already, in essence, let them down. So the lack of trust is there. So for an individual to go and try to re-engage them, it takes 6, 8, 10 times to really establish a trust before we can really start working with them and get them to be successful.
And the Opportunities for Youth Initiative and our community partner youth serving organizations have been really successful using public allies and AmeriCorps volunteers. These are young people themselves, 18 to 25, who are of the demographic of opportunity youth, to really send the message that career and educational goals and planning for these goals happen in the community and in connection with caring adults and service providers at the community partner organizations.
And definitely during this time, we created the Reengagement Center Network. So at this point in time, with 12 to 16 reengagement centers across the city of Phoenix, across the county, and these are really hubs in which they can go in at one-stop shops to get the things that Kristen are talking about, from career planning, education planning, and even really just receiving the basic needs, because we got to remove those barriers first in order for them to be successful in employment and education.
Well, Kristen, Tim mentioned the issue of trust sort of in the system, and I'm wondering, once you reestablish that, which I would imagine can take a little bit of time and a little bit of effort to do, do you find that the same barriers and the same reasons why maybe some of these young adults dropped out of school or haven't gotten a job still exist, and you have to overcome those and figure out a way to get them to where maybe they want to go?
Yeah, I think the difference in terms of understanding issues such as unresolved trauma, mental health issues, reasons for substance use and addiction, like in an effort to cope with life challenges, our Reengagement Center Network and our outreach team of Opportunities for Youth really understand and use a trauma-informed approach, such that they're approaching these young people and working with them to address unresolved trauma and to get those barriers out of the way so that young people can be successful in pursuing their educational and employment goals.
Other than mental health issues, Kristen, which you just mentioned, what are some of the other reasons why these young adults find themselves in this situation?
Well, there's definitely an array of issues, but I think one of the major issues is that there's something that happened in their lives. So we always talk about trauma-informed or things that happened in their life, and a lot of times it's taking care of other family members. They have to drop out to support maybe siblings and help the family unit. There's a lot of different reasons as to why these individuals are disconnected, and it's really removing those barriers first before we can even get them to be successful.
So with respect to issues like poverty, 2 out of 3 of our young people live at or below 200% of the poverty level, and that's for a family of one, just under $25,000 a year. For a family of 4, that's about $51,000 a year. So these young people are living in families where pursuing education sometimes is out of reach because they need to be income earners for their family.
And within our reengagement network, I think we served last year around 3,000 to 4,000 individuals. You know, homelessness is one of the top reasons why they come to us. The next is LGBTQ. So these are all issues that they have with housing and even with acceptance within their family. So there's a lot of reasons why disconnected youth are coming to our reengagement centers or within our network.
I want to ask about some of the economic factors that you guys have mentioned in terms of maybe needing to work or needing to take care of family members. How do you try to go about moving beyond that? I mean, if a young person is still having to take care of their family member, how do you try to find time for them to either go to school or get the kind of job that will get them the kind of income that they need?
We tried to draw down as much as possible the state level and federal level resources that make delaying working to pursue school or a technical or vocational credit program in the best interest and available for the young people. The Workforce Innovation and Opportunity Youth Act, the WIOA program, we have city and county providers as well as tribal nation providers. This is an extraordinary resource for young people that offers multiple thousands of dollars in tuition assistance for them to pursue short-term coursework that leads to a nationally recognized employer credential and typically has a work experience, which is a paid internship such that the federal dollars are paying for the employer to hire the young person on a trial basis so that the young person and the employer can test each other out. These are successful federal resources that help young people take the time but not lose the income that their families need to pursue their education and result in work.
And I think those that are in the high school system, it takes relationship building. We have one of the highest counselor ratios across the country. And so when you have a student who is going to have to drop out of high school, who's going to have to stay home, it takes somebody, a counselor, a caseworker, a parent liaison, whatever you call them in the school district, to really establish that relationship with that family to see what resources they have. And so there's just a lot of opportunity here within the state of Arizona to assist in some of these funding from pre-K to all the way to college and career. And how do we kind of stop all these gaps that are occurring along that education continuum? But it takes relationships.
Tim, when you talk about the lack of, for example, counselors in Arizona schools, do you find that it's easier or would be easier to try to keep somebody in high school and sort of guide them to what's next educationally or into the workforce than it is to have them drop out of school and then sort of have to start the process up over again?
Well, I think what's most important is that it's education attainment. So whether it's in high school, whether it's adult basic ed, or whether it's a charter school, it's about having that relationship with that family to get them into those right resources and keep them in school.
And it's more socially costly for young people when they drop out to have to reengage. Back to the issues of trust, they then have violations of trust with adults and institutions that becomes more and more difficult to reengage with them. It's also very costly economically to society and to taxpayers. The ASU Morrison Institute in 2015 conducted a study that resulted in the information that it costs taxpayers upwards of $51,000 per year per opportunity youth in lost wages, in increased use of public assistance, and reduced tax contributions.
Yeah, Tim, I wanted to ask about the impact to the community of, even though there are fewer of these opportunity youth now than there were even just a few years ago, I was going to ask about the impact to the community. It sounds like it's pretty substantial.
Yeah, it's definitely substantial. So we know when there's a higher disconnect rate, we know that social impact later on and along their life increases substantially. So when they get onto public assistance and those types of resources, it increases. So that's the issue I think Arizona is facing now, is when we have a high disconnect rate, the impact is we're going to see later in life when they are on social service programs that are impacting, of course, the tax base.
Kristen, what does the situation look like in rural parts of Arizona?
So rural counties fare considerably worse than more populous counties, urban or suburban counties, in terms of youth disconnection. The average rate in rural communities is closer to 20%. So one in five young people are disconnected in rural areas. That compares to about 13% in urban areas and 11% in suburban areas. There are also great racial and ethnic disparities as well. Black youth tend to be much more disconnected than Latino and white youth.
Do the same kinds of strategies that you've outlined that are seemingly working here in the Valley, do those work in rural parts of the state as well, or do you need something different there?
Well, I think the strategy, and what I mean by strategy, I think the core of it is really having a system in place to not only identify these individuals, but have the resources. So again, for me, and I come from a small rural town, Globe, Arizona, it's about relationships and trust at the bottom line. But I think some of these communities lack the resources that are available. But I think the approach is very similar. I just think that it definitely takes a specific organization or individual to really serve the youth in the rural communities.
We also have to be careful about not contributing to the brain drain or the flight of young people from rural centers into urban or suburban centers for jobs. So our employment outreach team is really sensitive in understanding who the local employers are or what the local industries are in rural areas and really bringing those employers to the table from the get-go, as is the importance of bringing young people from those communities to understand what their educational and employment pursuits are.
Well, it sounds like with so many issues when it comes to the sort of urban-rural divide, it comes down to resources, whether or not, I mean, Tim, you mentioned that the strategies are the same. It sounds like people in rural communities understand what the problem is and understand what they have to do to try to deal with it. The real question is whether or not they have the resources to actually do it.
I believe in coming from a rural area, it's definitely the resources. They may or may not know the impact or maybe understand how many individuals are disconnected or how many have dropped out of high school. They know that there's a problem. They just don't have the resources to address it.
All right. Kristen, Tim, thanks a lot for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Kristen Ferguson-Colvin is director of the Center for Human Capital and Youth Development at ASU. She's also on the faculty in the Watts College of Public Service and Community Solutions there. Tim Valencia is youth and education director for the city of Phoenix.